Thank you and good morning. Thank you to COSBA for the opportunity to speak. Look, SMEs are in many ways the backbone of the Australian economy. At the Reserve Bank, the importance of SMEs has long been reflected in both our research program and also in our liaison program. Indeed, last July, in fact, the bank hosted its annual Small Business Financing Roundtable event for the 31st time. And our liaison program that spans the breadth of the country is now into its 24th year. As we heard in an earlier session this morning, there are different ways to view the contribution that SMEs make to the Australian economy and to our society. The first is through their central role in the daily life of our communities. Of the more than 2.5 million businesses in Australia, 97% are designated small firms with less than 20 employees, as per the ABS definition, with a further 2% of firms classified as medium-sized, between 20 and 200 employees. A particularly notable contribution that SMEs make is through the labour market, where they account for 2/3 of private sector employment. And more than this, SMEs are integral to the social fabric of our communities, whether it's sponsoring the local kids' sporting team, a community theatre production, or charity event. And nowhere is this more true than in regional Australia, where many SMEs are family-run businesses. And who doesn't, of course, have a favourite weekend local? But there's another way in which to view the contribution that SMEs make to our collective well-being. It's a narrower one, but no less important, and that is as engines of innovation in the Australian economy. SMEs can introduce competitive tension to establish markets that are dominated by larger incumbents, driving them to be more efficient. And in generating or diffusing new ideas, they can create new markets for goods and services and drive the reallocation of capital and labour to more productive use. This creative energy can be of sufficient scale to directly impact our living standards. But unleashing this creative energy first requires access to financing on reasonable terms. And for a long time, this has been easier said than done. It is this innovation role for SMEs, one that has received less attention, that I'll focus on today. I'll begin by setting out some markers showing how SMEs are helping to support innovation in the Australian economy. I'll then discuss some of the long-standing financing challenges experienced by SMEs seeking funding for investments in intangible assets that have a long and uncertain payoff. I'll conclude by discussing the evolving role of the Australian financial system in supporting innovation among smaller entrepreneurial firms. My punchline today is twofold. First, SMEs have become increasingly important participants in the innovation ecosystem in Australia, particularly in professional, scientific, and technical services. In some respects, they appear to be taking over the innovation baton from large firms, including in early stage investment and research and development and intellectual property rights. Second, while the Australian financial system and policy settings have lent more support to innovation-focused SMEs over the past decade, there's more to be done if the next generation of innovative Australian firms are to have the wind at their back. Let me now discuss the contribution that SMEs are making to innovation in Australia. This matters because innovation is a feedstock for productivity. Productivity drives our living standards. SMEs have got a growing role to play here. On first impression, a discussion of SMEs in this context might seem a bit out of step with today's international focus on large, winner-take-all superstar firms. You can think of big tech in the US here, for instance. Here we see a rising share of sales concentrated in a handful of large firms whose high markups allow them to generate abnormal profits. This is no accident, as powerful network effects and high barriers to entry can further entrench the market dominance of large incumbents. This is the context for concerns from competition regulators the world over. But I want to discuss a less covered story today, and that is the pulse of innovative intent that is running through parts of the Australian SME ecosystem. This pulse may be less visible than the latest edition of the iPhone, but it's happening nonetheless. Consider spending on research and development. SMEs now spend around 25% more on R&D than large firms in Australia, which is the largest differential in decades. The SME share of R&D spending in Australia oscillated between 30 and 40% for many years. Today, that figure stands at 55%. All of the real decline in national R&D spending over the past 10 to 15 years can be attributed to large firms. And while real R&D spending by large firms has retreated to levels observed in the mid-2000s, for SMEs, it's more than doubled over the same period and has increased as a share of GDP. Today, the biggest contribution to R&D spending in Australia comes from SMEs in professional, scientific and technical services, comprising 26% of the national total. By comparison, large firms in this sector comprise 8% of the national total. And while fewer SMEs are likely to be innovating at any one time compared to large firms, the intensity of innovation is much higher for the SMEs that are innovating. These SMEs are more likely to be throwing the kitchen sink at innovation. This includes by investing in intangible assets like intellectual property rights. Similarly, among firms that are active in innovation, the effects on income tend to be far more consequential for SMEs than larger firms. In the US, recent research has pointed to a trend of declining in-house R&D spending by large established firms, alongside the repurposing of innovation budgets to fund buyouts of smaller firms that are considered better placed to commercialise the best of breed ideas from interactions with the university system. Some preliminary research at the RBA has also identified that Australian firms with IP assets are disproportionately likely to be the focus of the buyout decisions of established firms over a period where the direct R&D spending by large Australian firms has declined. This is not to suggest that large Australian firms no longer have an interest in innovation, only that it may be taking a different, more acquisition-based form to the past. The Australian economy, like most others, tends to be an importer of new-to-the-world innovations, rather than a large-scale producer like the United States. But in the case of firms that are engaged in innovation in Australia, SMEs are around twice as likely to have introduced new-to-world innovations compared with large firms. These types of innovations are harder to produce and so are typically riskier to finance. But they are also likely to generate large benefits for the economy and society. IP rights in the form of patents and trademarks can also be important markers of innovation and entrepreneurship. They are closely tied to the creation of high-growth businesses, and productivity is much higher in firms holding them. SMEs now hold almost all patents and trademarks filed by residents in Australia. And more interesting is that over recent years, the number of patent-holding SMEs has increased at a rate 5 times faster than the increase in the number of SMEs in the economy. This is a pattern we don't observe among large firms. Economic dynamism supports productivity-enhancing resource allocation in the economy. This can be seen in wage and productivity differences across firms and in business entry and exit patterns. For Australian firms of all sizes, there's a positive wage differential between firms that hold IP rights compared with those that do not. But that differential is especially pronounced for smaller firms. And while firm entry and exit rates have generally declined in Australia, the entry rate for small firms has tracked sideways over the most recent decade. Let me switch gears here and discuss the long-running challenges experienced by SMEs in attracting financing in general and financing for innovation in particular. We've consistently heard at the bank through our liaison program about the difficulties SMEs experience in accessing external financing on reasonable terms. This message also accords with surveys of Australian businesses indicating that a lack of financing is a key barrier to innovation for small firms. There are a number of factors at work here, but the highest order problem is that small firms are just riskier propositions for suppliers of capital. Survival rates bear this out. Small firms, particularly young small firms, are more likely to go out of business in any given year than their larger counterparts. In the first handful of years, most young small firms either crash or crash through. And while bank loans to SMEs comprise around half of all business lending in Australia, many SMEs report experiencing tight financial conditions in the form of credit rationing and/or high borrowing costs. This is partly linked to the risk weights that are relatively higher for SME lending, reflecting banks' risk modelling, where SME loans are expected to be around twice as likely to fall into arrears as for large firms. And loans to SMEs almost always require collateralisation, unlike those to large firms, and I'll come back to that in a moment. Lenders and investors also tend to be more circumspect in financing SMEs for any number of reasons. There can be a lack of scale in financing smaller entities. Their revenues quite often are more volatile, and informational asymmetries are more acute compared with larger firms where more information on their finances is publicly available. And if many SMEs feel as though they're kicking into the wind when it comes to accessing financing, those winds can blow stronger still for SMEs that are seeking debt funding to support their innovation priorities. One issue is that innovation-based assets are often largely or exclusively intangible and therefore not of a standardised form that most traditional lenders prefer. Given that almost all SME lending is secured and residential property has an outsized role in collateralising the loans of small businesses, access to innovation-based debt financing is difficult. This is particularly the case for younger entrepreneurs who are struggling to get onto the housing ladder. We also hear through our liaison program that even if small business owners do hold residential property, some are reluctant to post it as collateral, given the obvious stress involved. And if they do, they're more likely to be more risk-averse in their business investment decisions, which one can understand given their family home would be on the line. We can see that banks are much less likely to finance the innovation-based investments of SMEs compared with large firms. SMEs are therefore more likely than large firms to fund innovation-based investments from family and friends and non-bank institutions like venture capital and private equity funds who are better placed to bear such risk. I should note here that this pattern is not unique to Australia, but rather has been widespread across advanced economies and is one of the factors supporting the growth of technology-focused venture capital and private equity funds. Another funding issue that is felt acutely by innovation-focused SMEs is navigating the so-called valley of death. This is the long lead time between converting greenfield research ideas into commercially viable propositions, during which time firms can burn through their initial funding. This valley can seem prohibitively wide for many lenders. There is some promising news here, however. While funding challenges will likely remain a fact of life for many SMEs, capital is now being mobilised in Australia in ways that are beginning to ease some of the constraints on innovation financing, at least for a certain cohort of firms. A key development here has been the emergence of an institutional-grade domestic VC industry. Over the past decade, the industry has channeled long-term equity capital into some of Australia's more innovative and scalable businesses. This capital can support small firms that are loss-making during an intensive period of ideation and prototype development. Investment in the Australian VC industry is now in the range of peer economies, though still considerable distance behind the US and Israel. This capital is in search of the far right tail of the distribution of young small firm returns, where a minority of enterprises can break out with scalable, impactful innovations, which more than makes up for the losses in VC portfolios, companies that didn't make it. At the same time, there are limits to what the private domestic VC industry can achieve in supporting innovation in Australia. In any given year, only a small fraction of innovating firms that seek VC funding actually obtain it, and the sectoral focus of VC funding is more narrowly skewed. Over the past decade, government has had an important role, direct and indirect, in easing constraints on innovation funding through long-term equity and cash flow support. Tax benefits for fund managers and investors have been available through VC programs supported by the Australian government. And in 2017, CSIRO Australia founded the Main Sequence VC Fund to serve as an incubator for scientific entrepreneurial talent. A range of government-backed initiatives have also been introduced over recent years to support SME cash flows more generally, including by shrinking the payment times for SME invoices. But arguably the most valued and direct source of cash flow support for innovating SMEs has been the R&D tax credit. Debt market financing is also available to innovating SMEs, though those that are cash flow positive have more options. VC debt funds have sprung up in recent times with expertise in valuing intangible assets and extending growth credit aimed at lengthening the runways for SMEs so they can survive through to the next funding round. And the difference in variable rates between SME loans and large firm loans has compressed in recent years, and it's possible that recent reductions to bank capital requirements for SME loans eases financial conditions just a little. Non-traditional lenders are making unsecured credit available to SMEs based on their analysis of transaction data, though they still comprise a very small share of the financing pie. It's also worth highlighting, it's not just increased access to capital that can support innovation-focused entrepreneurs. Access to networks and advisory forums are becoming commonplace, and there's growing recognition across the community of former company founders and experienced investors that strategic advisory support, both formal and informal, has a key role to play. So let me conclude. Our national living standards will turn on the propensity of firms to innovate. We should be under no illusions that financing constraints for many SMEs remain substantial. And they can be even bigger for SMEs that are trying to innovate, with little in the way of tangible collateral to pledge as security for financing, and where it can take years to generate positive cash flow on the back of investments in greenfield ideas and untried technologies. These types of investments are not for the faint of heart. But in recent years, there have been signs, including in R&D spending and IP rights, to suggest that the contribution of SMEs to the innovation economy has been rising. There is a cohort of Australian SMEs that are innovating intensely, including those with ambitions to compete on the global stage. And as in the United States, it's possible that a division of labour is beginning to emerge in the Australian innovation ecosystem, where large firms increasingly look to acquire and scale up the ideas and practices developed by innovative small firms. Time will tell here, but if we do follow the pattern in the United States, where many large firms are looking to innovate more through acquisitions of dynamic SMEs rather than through in-house R&D, then it will place even further importance on our SME sector as an engine of innovation in Australia. Either way, we need large firms playing their part in the innovation and productivity challenges facing the country. We need both engines firing. Of course, it's not feasible to expect anything like a majority of SMEs to operate on the global innovation frontier. Most understandably have more modest local ambitions. But given the overwhelming majority of firms in Australia are SMEs, it would take only a very small increase in the share of those firms to successfully innovate to have a material impact on the Australian economy. It's therefore in our collective interest for the financial system and our policy settings to interact in ways that continue to support innovative Australian entrepreneurs. If history is any guide, the positive externalities could entail benefits to the Australian economy and society that extend well beyond just the firms producing them. Thanks very much.